Today is Tuesday, January 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, North Korea fires two short-range missiles into the sea in its fourth weapons launch this month.
South Korea's military says the suspected ballistic missiles flew around 236 miles on a maximum altitude of 26 miles.
Nigerian authorities say the military is responding to killings and kidnappings in the northwest.
It is not the first time the president has issued strong worded threats against armed gangs in the country, known locally as bandits.
And Ukraine and Germany pushed to revive peace talks with Russia to end conflict in the Donbass region. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. North Korea has fired two short-range missiles into the sea in its fourth weapons launch this month. South Korea's military says the suspected ballistic missile flew around 236 miles at a maximum altitude of 26 miles before landing off the country's northeastern coast. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command says the missile launches highlight the destabilizing impact of North Korea's, quote, illicit, unquote, weapons program, Associated Press correspondent Charles Ledesma reports.
South Korea's military says the suspected ballistic missiles flew around 236 miles on a maximum altitude of 26 miles before landing off the country's northeastern coast. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command adds the missile launches have highlighted the destabilizing impact of the North's illicit weapons program. Some experts say North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is returning to a tried and true tactic of pressuring his neighbours and the US with missile launches and outrageous threats before offering negotiations meant to extract concessions. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
China's foreign ministry on Monday called for relevant parties to focus on the overarching picture of peace and stability in the Korean Peninsula. This after the Japan Coast Guard reported a suspected ballistic missile launch from North Korea. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Linyang told journalists at a regular briefing in Beijing that China hopes that relevant parties jointly promote the political resolution of Korean Peninsula issues. Nuclear-armed North Korea had already conducted three other missile tests in less than 2 weeks before Monday, an unusual rapid series of launches. Emirati police says a suspected drone attack claimed by Yemeni's Houthi rebels may have sparked an explosion that engulfed three oil tankers in Abu Dhabi and another fire at an extension of the Abu Dhabi International Airport that killed three people and wounded six. Abu Dhabi police identified the dead as two Indian nationals and one Pakistani. Meanwhile, Yemeni Houthi rebels say they targeted the United Arab Emirates without elaborating. The Iranian-backed Houthis have claimed several attacks that Emirati officials later denied took place. In an interview, Torbjorn Solvet, an analyst at the risk intelligence company Verex Maplecroft, says such drone attacks are on the rise.
This attack is very much a reminder of the very complex missile and drone attack threat that we're seeing in the UAE and in the region. We've obviously seen several examples of similar attacks in Saudi Arabia.
That's Torbjorn Solvet, an analyst at the risk intelligence company Verex Maplecroft. Nigerian authorities say the military is responding to a series of killings and kidnappings by gunmen in the country's northwest. Locals say that in the latest attack, gunmen on motorcycles Saturday raided a village in Kebbi State, killing at least 50 people. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
President Muhammadu Buhari's senior aide, Garba Shehu, said on Twitter Sunday that the president has ordered the military to, quote, respond robustly to the cases of killings and kidnappings, end quote. He added, quote, the federal government is willing to strengthen support and cooperation of all states, end quote, and said the president believes that with the full cooperation of the citizens, Nigeria will surely overcome this problem. It is not the first time the president has issued strong worded threats against armed gangs in the country, known locally as bandits. But gangs continue to raid communities, looting for supplies, and killing and kidnapping for ransom, mostly in the northwest and central regions. The latest incident occurred in Dankeda village in Kebbi State over the weekend. More than 50 people were reportedly killed. Last week, more than 200 people were killed in attacks that lasted 3 days in northwestern Zamfara State. However, security analyst Kabiru Adamu says recent efforts by authorities are paying off.
Since the president renewed his call to the security forces, and what we've seen is military airstrikes in forests where these bandits, they're holding their victims. We've also seen an increase in police operations. So all of that has affected the ability of this groups, these bandits, this gunmen, to operate.
Late last year, Nigeria officially classified armed gangs as terrorists, putting them in the same category as Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa Province, ISWAP. Experts say the designation was a major step in taking deterrent measures against the groups. Senator Irebu is a security analyst.
The attack doesn't also diminish that fact that, yes, there's progress. The terrorists' capacity has greatly been diminished. So there are definitely progress from what it used to be.
Nigeria's armed forces said last week they killed 537 armed bandits and other criminal elements in the region and arrested 374 others since May of last year. It said 452 kidnapped civilians have been rescued. Still, the armed forces are struggling to maintain basic security. More than 10,000 people were killed in Nigeria in banditry and terror-related attacks last year, according to the U.S.-based Council for Foreign Relations. This month, Nigeria received clearance to deploy fighter jets purchased from the United States after months of delay due to human rights concerns. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Ukraine's former president Petro Poroshenko returned to Kyiv to face charges of treason, setting up a showdown some fear is a distraction from a possible Russian offensive. Lucy Field of Reuters has more.
Ukraine's former president Petro Poroshenko landed in Kyiv on Monday to face treason charges, which he says were trumped up by allies of his successor, President Volodymyr Zelensky. His return sets up a showdown that critics see as an ill-judged distraction. Ukraine is currently bracing for a possible Russian military offensive and appealing to Western allies for support. In a brief standoff at border control after arriving on a flight from Warsaw, Poroshenko accused border guards of taking away his passport. Then he addressed flag-waving supporters outside the airport. The treason allegations relate to the financing of Russian-backed separatist fighters through illegal coal sales in 2014-15 while he was president. Western diplomats called for political unity in Ukraine ahead of Poroshenko's arrival. Poroshenko's party accused Zelensky of a reckless attempt to silence political opposition. Zelensky's administration says the prosecutors and judiciary are independent and accuses Poroshenko of thinking he is above the law. Ukraine and its allies have sounded the alarm about tens of thousands of Russian troops massed near its borders. After days of diplomacy last week achieved no breakthrough, the United States said Russia was preparing a pretext for an attack, something the Kremlin dismissed as unfounded.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Ukraine and Germany are pushing to revive four-way peace talks with Russia and France to end the conflict in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said at a briefing in Kyiv, along his German counterpart, Annalena Baerbock. Kuleba said it is important Germany and France do not take decisions about Ukraine behind Ukraine's back. Kyiv and its Western allies have sounded the alarm about Russia massing tens of thousands of troops near its borders in preparation for a possible military offensive. Talks between Moscow and the United States have produced no breakthrough so far. French far-right presidential candidate Eric Zemmour was fined 10,000 euros or $11,400 on Monday for inciting racial hatred. Edward Boran of Reuters reports.
It's over remarks in which he called young migrants killers, thieves and rapists. Zemmour, a former political commentator, is competing with the more established far-right candidate Marine Le Pen and conservative Valérie Pécresse to challenge centre-right President Emmanuel Macron in April's presidential election. The French court case concerned remarks he made on right-wing channel CNews in 2020 about migrants who arrive as unaccompanied children. He said, quote, "They've got no reason for being here. They're thieves, they're killers, they're rapists. That's all they do. They should be sent back. For several weeks last year, opinion polls indicated that Zemmour, who also has previous convictions for inciting racial hatred, had a chance of placing second in the presidential poll and facing Macron in a runoff. His campaign has since lost some steam and he now polls fourth. Zemmour said he would appeal the ruling. He stood by his 2020 comments, adding that the court was condemning him for expressing his views.
That's Edward Boran of Reuters. Research indicates the Omicron variant of the coronavirus spreads faster than its predecessors, and experts warn more mutations of the virus are likely. As Omicron infections surge in the United States, President Joe Biden promises his administration will purchase 1 billion COVID-19 tests and make available free to Americans, quote, high-quality masks, unquote. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy is pushing back on critics who say the administration is not doing enough to control the pandemic. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, recently released updated guidance for masks to protect against the COVID-19 disease. The Protective Healthcare Production Facility in Paterson, New Jersey, is the N95, considered the premier respirator for protection against the infection.
The purpose of vaccines, the most important job of vaccines, is to save your life and keep you out of the hospital. And by that measure, these vaccines and boosters are working and working well. Now, you will hear, as many people have already heard, about people who have cases that are mild or asymptomatic, people who test positive despite being vaccinated or boosted. But keep in mind, what is often being prevented there is a more severe infection.
Murthy added that data shows strong efficacy for vaccination despite a roughly 20% chance for infection in those who are both vaccinated and have received a booster shot. The Biden administration has faced criticism for not acquiring enough masks and tests as Omicron spreads through the country.
When Omicron came, it created an extraordinary increase in demand. It's why the U.S., the U.K., and other countries found themselves without as much testing as they needed. But we are pulling out the stops on testing.
Dr. Murthy says the administration oversaw an eightfold increase in testing between December and January. Critics say it's simply not enough. Former Trump Homeland Security Advisor Bossert adds that pandemic-weary Americans must remain vigilant.
Americans that are frustrated and giving up, I think they need to hear that a return to some rigor in our social distancing is necessary because our hospital beds and, more importantly, our hospital ICU beds are filling up and in some states are completely full.
The World Health Organization recently reported 15 million new COVID-19 cases in 1 week, a 55% jump from earlier figures. The U.S. alone accounts for nearly 800,000 new infections each day. The CDC has yet to recommend nationwide usage of the N95 mask, but the Washington Post reports the agency is considering updated guidance. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The number of people who suffered a major depressive order worldwide rose 28% in 2020 during the pandemic to an estimated 246 million cases, and those suffering from anxiety disorders rose 26%. These findings come from a Lancet survey using data from studies collected in North America, Europe, and East Asia. As Laura Bowman reports, this study found women fared worse than men.
Anxiety and depression are up in the age of COVID. A Lancet survey estimates the number of people worldwide suffering from a major depressive disorder rose by 28% in 2020. Those with anxiety disorders worldwide increased by 26%. The effects of lockdowns, school and business closures, and the spread of the virus in general are among the factors blamed for the rise, say researchers. Margaret Sullivan, who is 87, has been stuck at home caring for her 92-year-old husband.
There are days when I'm really sad, but I don't know whether it's the COVID that makes me sad or the other things going on that were going on anyway. For us, when you know you don't have that many years left, it's a lost year.
The elderly can be especially at risk for both isolation and faring poorly if they catch the virus. But mental health experts say they are hearing from young people the most. During the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, an estimated 1 in 4 youths globally experienced clinically elevated depression symptoms, while 1 in 5 young people experienced higher anxiety, according to JAMA Pediatrics. Dr. Beth Salcedo heads the Ross Center for Anxiety and Depression in Washington, D.C.
I think in this country, certainly stigma has really changed in the last 20 years, and certainly with our younger population, they're talking about anxiety and depression a lot, whereas people, you know, in my generation and older didn't talk about it so much.
22-year-old Eva Zarpas had her college studies go virtual during COVID-19. She says the isolation has heightened the anxiety and depression she already felt.
Being unable to connect with large groups of people in the way that, you know, humans are used to. It was really hard just to wake up, you know? Being asleep was my favorite thing about the day because I didn't have to be awake and be thinking and wanting to be with people but not being able to.
Her 14-year-old sister Stella suffered too.
It's important for kids to always be around each other. Just that sheer isolation, which really made it difficult to kind of cope with all the other things when you're not getting just basic needs met by talking to other people.
Experts say it will take time for the mental health effects of COVID-19 to pass. Dr. Beth Salcedo.
People have lost a lot in this last year and a half. It'll be 2 years, and they're going to have to put their lives back together. And I think it's going to take a while. And I think the ramifications from an emotional point of view are going to take a long time to fully recover.
Demand for treatment for anxiety disorders has increased since the start of the pandemic, according to the American Psychological Association. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
A new assessment of the global labor market finds that recovery from the employment crisis created by the COVID-19 pandemic will be fragile and will worsen inequalities between rich and poor countries. The projection comes in a new report from the United Nations International Labor Organization. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
ILO economists say labor markets are recovering from the pandemic-induced crisis much more slowly than previously expected. They project the number of global working hours this year will be 1.8% below the numbers of pre-pandemic hours worked in the last quarter of 2019. That deficit, they say, is equivalent to a loss of 52 million full-time jobs, twice as large as the number predicted in last year's global market survey. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says this shortfall in the labor supply comes on top of persistently high pre-crisis levels of unemployment.
In 2022, we project that global unemployment will stand at 207 million, and that's 20 million above the pre-pandemic level in 2019. Put in percentage terms, we expect the 2022 unemployment rate to be 5.9%.
The report finds a great divergence in recovery between regions. It says the European and North American regions are showing encouraging signs of recovery. The worst affected regions are Southeast Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean. Ryder says the richer countries are expected to emerge from this crisis in better shape than the poorer countries. He says a big gap exists between the labor market prospects of countries depending on their level of income and development.
Many low and middle income economies are struggling to get back to pre-pandemic levels of employment and of job quality. And insufficient access to vaccines is putting pressure on their healthcare systems, with tight fiscal space limiting the ability of their governments to use stimulus measures to support their labor markets.
Ryder says the International Labor Organization has not taken a policy position on the legitimacy or otherwise of vaccination mandates in the workplace. He says a fundamental problem facing work sites is the unequal access to vaccines. For him, he says, the bottom line is to ensure that people are able to work in healthy, safe environments. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, President Joe Biden says Americans must commit to the unfinished work of Martin Luther King Jr., delivering jobs and justice and protecting what he calls, quote, the sacred right to vote, unquote, a right from which all others flow, unquote. Biden's remarks Monday were among many by politicians acknowledging unmet needs for racial equality on Martin Luther King Day, the civil rights leader's eldest son criticized Biden and Congress for failing to overcome Republican moves to make voting harder in 19 states. Biden says it adds up to voter suppression and election subversion. Republican Senator Tim Scott countered by accusing Democrats of labeling his party members as racists. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Opoin, Washington. UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, is calling for international action to end fighting in Africa's Central Sahel region, an armed conflict that has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced more than 2.5 million over the last decade. Again, Lisa Schnein reports from Geneva.
Data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project finds violence in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger caused more than 4,660 deaths in the first 6 months of 2020. Statistics from other international monitoring groups and UN agencies show internal displacement in Africa's Central Sahel region has increased tenfold since 2013, from 217,000 to 2.1 million by late 2021. UN refugee spokesman Boris Cheshikov says displacement continues to grow across the Sahel as civilians flee violent attacks.
Armed groups reportedly carried out over 800 deadly attacks last year. Such violence uprooted 450,000 people within their countries and forced a further 36,000 to flee to a neighboring country as a refugee. Women and children are often the worst affected and disproportionately exposed to extreme vulnerability and the threat of gender-based violence.
Cheshikov says conditions across the region continue to deteriorate. He says host communities and government authorities are buckling under increasing pressure despite their commitment to help the displaced. He says humanitarian agencies are finding it increasingly difficult and dangerous to deliver assistance and protection. He says humanitarians risk road attack, ambush, and carjacking.
What we have been calling for, and we repeat this call again now, is for a unified, a strategic, a substantial intervention in the Sahel that will make sure that international efforts are supporting the governments and host communities who are, and a security response cannot be there on its own. It needs to be hand in glove with humanitarian and development action.
Cheshikov says the UNHCR is leading an effort by United Nations and private agencies to provide shelter and protection services, including combating gender-based violence. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African university students are fighting mandates that require they be vaccinated against COVID-19 before returning to the classrooms. Even some students who have had the vaccine and want others to get it are against the policy, and the students' union is threatening protests across the country. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
Universities across South Africa are gearing up for a new school year as the country emerges from its fourth wave of the coronavirus pandemic. And vaccines to prevent COVID-19 will be a prerequisite for many returning to campus. The South African Union of Students has warned protests of vaccine mandates are looming. At the University of Johannesburg, students say they're angry that they weren't consulted and claim the policies infringe on their constitutional right to bodily integrity. Malisi Manana is the president of the Student Representative Council for the University of Johannesburg.
Students must go to vaccinate under their free will. There's no one who is in a bio bubble. So whether you are vaccinated or not, the moment you leave campus to do your grocery shopping or go anywhere else, you come across people who are vaccinated and who are not vaccinated.
Less than half of South African adults have been inoculated, and there's no national vaccine mandate in place. The reasons behind vaccine hesitancy are complex. Students say their decisions are made on personal preference, cultural, and religious beliefs, despite there being no evidence such methods protect against COVID-19. Lengiwe Kmulu is an honor student at the University of Johannesburg.
From the first wave, I've stuck to African home remedies. I haven't been hospitalized. I've never tested positive. And I think because that worked for me thus far, I will continue with that remedy. People who have vaccinated are said to have been protected from the virus, and they should find ease in that. They shouldn't be bothered by the fact that someone else is choosing to not vaccinate and exercise that right.
Vaccines do protect people, especially against severe disease. But one of the country's top doctors says unvaccinated people pose other risks beyond catching or spreading COVID-19. Dr. Shabir Madi is a professor of vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand.
They are much more likely to end up in hospital, in ICU, and to die of COVID-19. And ending up in hospital is not just a burden that individual assumes. It's a burden that is shared across society, both in terms of the funding of the healthcare system, as well as other impacts that materialize in that hospital when there's needing to start to cut back on, as an example, elective surgery because healthcare facilities are coming under pressure.
Which is why he's calling for tougher measures on those resisting the shots.
All choices come with consequences, and that's the whole point, is that a mandatory vaccination doesn't mean that we're going to tie you down or put you in prison if you choose not to be vaccinated. It should come with consequences, just like there are consequences to every other choice that one makes in life.
For unvaccinated students, it's losing access to campus. The University of Johannesburg said in a statement that exemptions will be considered on health or religious grounds. Exempt students will have to provide a negative COVID test each week. If they aren't granted an exemption, students like Nglu fear what being barred from campus will mean about their future.
If I'm refusing to vaccinate because it goes against my will and whatever it is that I believe, and the institution wants to protect me, then we must find means to find common ground. If it means I have to go for testing every week, if it means I have to screen every 2 hours, then so be it. But means must be made. They can't take away my right to an education because I don't want to vaccinate.
The University of Johannesburg says students can always regain campus access once they get their shot. Classes begin February 14th. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN peacekeeping mission to Mali, MINUSMA, said it has temporarily suspended all flights following West African EU states' imposed sanctions that disrupted air and land transport. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
MINUSMA flights were abruptly grounded Sunday night in what an email to staff said was a temporary suspension. The email, reviewed by VOA, said MINUSMA has to temporarily suspend all flights and that staff would be informed as soon as the mission receives clearance from the government authorities to resume flights. Several regional airlines have suspended service to Mali due to sanctions imposed by the Economic Community of West African States that stopped air and land transport between countries in the regional bloc, known as ECOWAS, and Mali. After France backed the ECOWAS sanctions, which were imposed following a special summit in Accra, Ghana on January 9th, national carrier Air France also suspended service to Mali. MINUSMA normally operates flights within Mali in between Bamako and Mali's central and northern cities, where there are several MINUSMA bases. During a UN Security Council meeting on January 11th, Russia and China blocked UN support for the ECOWAS sanctions. A MINUSMA spokesperson was not immediately available for comment. Annie Risenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Apo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is the Voice.
of America, Washington,